Hello, welcome on in. I just feel like having a little easygoing chat with anyone who feels like hanging out. I am Cara Burrell. This is what I wish I had after leaving Mormonism. I hope you'll stick around for this whole video, subscribe, hit the bell for notifications so you never miss a video. I just got back from a trip, basically from hell, that I wanted to tell you about and share some insights on my journey. Leaving Mormonism is leaving a high demand religion. And when you do so, it is not just like deleting an app off of your phone that you no longer use. I've said before, and I'll say it till I die, that it feels like being a computer without an operating system. It feels like ripping out the motherboard of your own nervous system, right? So when I was 31 years old, I left with my husband that I'd been with for 11 years. We had two kids. We had another one on the way. I thought that I was just walking away from an untrue thing. I thought I was ending my belief in something that was made up, and then I was going to go on and reclaim my mind and go on a journey of learning all the things with my newfound pattern recognition and cognitive abilities. I was out to lunch last week with a bunch of friends, and one of my guy friends was explaining his journey leaving the church, and at one point he was like, so yeah, and then I toodalooed out of the church, and we're all like, toodalooed? Just toodalooed out of the church, and I was like, bro, stop and check your privilege. Toodalooing looks very different for a lot of different people, right? So when I was toodalooing, what I didn't realize is that I was actually ripping out the only nervous system regulation structure that I had ever known, which is a big deal because, trigger warning, my life has been full of triggers. So I was the victim of some sexual abuse from the time I was 2 to 7, moved around quite a few times. My dad wasn't around a lot. Tensions in my house were always really hot. And I was the youngest of 5 kids. One of them had special needs. So the church and my belief in it was always really the glue that kept my family together and kept my mind together in a lot of ways. So for 31 years of my life, I'm telling you, I was a devout believer. When I prayed, the system worked for me. I could calm my mind and my body instantly. When I fasted once a month, I could reset my intentions for the following month. When I bore my testimony, I could cry and get out all of those stuck emotions and feel warm feelings and feel more connected to God and to my ward family. And when I couldn't sleep at night, I could recite scriptures in my mind and sing back songs to myself from choir about how God will never leave me lost and alone in his beloved world. Objectively a lie, but also a banger. What I didn't realize is that I was also leaving, in addition to Mormonism and disappointing my family and all that fun stuff, I was leaving my emotional support system. My nervous system was going to be fried. And that really is the foundation of everything. When I would hear people throughout my journey leaving Mormonism the last 5 years, people talk about nervous system regulation, it just sounded like therapist talk mumbo jumbo. And it wasn't until I knew what having a calm nervous system felt like and knew what it didn't. So for me, living alone has really helped out. But don't let this shirt give you any, this is not me pushing any ideas on you. Britney Spears is famously photographed in a paparazzi photo wearing this. And so anyway, back on topic. I needed to know what a calm nervous system really felt like because it's the foundation of everything. And it turns out that Mormonism and honestly, you know, most organized religions are really less about theology and more about giving your nervous system something predictable, something like a customer service line where, you know, you've got a problem and there's a way out. I liken it to having like Apple Care for the soul, something that's expensive and it's glitchy and it's run by men in suits. But at least someone picks up the phone when your existential hard drive crashes. So I didn't realize when I left the church that that's what my religion was. In addition to being an untrue thing, it was also a sophisticated regulation system and one that I didn't build myself. And therefore, leaving kind of sucks hard because you have to build one while going through a bunch of other things too. So I love the word alchemy, not just because it sounds fancy and ancient, but also Taylor Swift uses it sometimes too. That's neither here nor there, but means to me like turning garbage feelings into gold. So when I learned what it felt like to kind of alchemize pain into a feeling of freedom, I had to kind of go back piece by piece of how I get there and how I don't. So to me, becoming non-religious didn't just mean I'm not believing in this structure anymore. It meant that I was kind of losing the recipe, you know, the formula of how to metabolize pain and disappointment and chaos and move that into something that I could work with. And boy, howdy, did I really need to know how to work through some pain for my trip to LA this past weekend, which I feel like, you know, showed me how far I've come and what work I still have yet to do. So I had an experience throwing up off of the edge of a whale watching boat cruise for 2 hours. I forgot that I get motion sickness, silly me, but wasn't my fault. The sea was angry that day, my friends. The boat that was traveling at what it felt like, I don't know, 40 miles an hour, but it was also dropping up and down on the waves in increments of like a 6-story building vertically, you know what I mean? So my sister and I are hanging onto the bars up front. We're going up and down, like bracing ourselves for every wave. At first, we were really feeling like our ancestors who traveled across the Atlantic from Germany. So for about a good 15 minutes, it was glorious. I was really all about that Ellis Island life, and it turned really fast, and I had to hold onto the railing for dear life and pull myself inside, ask for a vomit bag just in case they hand me a trash bag. Thank you so much. Let me just go ahead and open this up. No time. Run to the nearest trash can, hurled my guts out, went to the back of the boat with the other castaways, really not knowing if we'd live or die. So as miserable as I felt, I also felt so present and able to be proud of the ways that I could hold myself through this 2.5-hour boat ride. And also a feeling of camaraderie, really, amongst the other 10 people hurling off of the back of the boat. Really felt spiritual in some ways, you know, not to mention the other 10 people lying down inside the boat begging for the ride to be over, like my sister. After we got off the boat, I turned to my sister and I'm like, you know how they say there's no atheists in foxholes? She's like, no. And I'm like, well, they say that, and I think that there's no atheists on whale watching boats. Would you like to join me in singing a primary song right now? You know, another objectively untrue thing, but still a banger. Heavenly Father, are you really there? And do you hear and answer every child's prayer? The data for me pretty much says that he doesn't. Maybe you're someone else, you're separate than me. Maybe he does for you. But for me, who answers those prayers? It's me. It's people around me. It's always been just us. It's always been just this. So I had my hate face deep in a garbage bag, started to hum a primary song just a little bit, just a tiny bit. And I was like, yeah, I like this. I like singing like this. Let's explore this. Like, why am I doing this? The truth of, you know, that line that about atheists on whale watching boats, that truth for me is that I was able to regulate myself amongst the dry heaving by tapping into like the same space that I cultivated the 3 times that I gave birth. You know, like when you are in pain and there's no exit and you can't get out of it, the time in which that is the most profound is birth. That's also being on a boat that you can't get off of when you're seasick. It also can be marriage. That's living in community with other people. That's having parents. That's parenting. That's the space that you alchemize the hard stuff that you can't get out of. And you have to be like, it's all you and this pain is everywhere. What are you going to do about it? So where, you know, I used to sing primary songs that were comforting. I realized in the years since of being out of the church, when in doubt, really, for me, sing, hum. It is that vibration that pulls my mind out of the loop of chaos that it's in. Like, hey, you have a physical body too, and you're more than these thoughts. And look at your nose. You have a nose. It can breathe in and out. Cool thing, huh? Nothing can happen faster than one breath at a time. No pain can swallow me whole if I'm aware of my breath. So there's a calming story in, you know, primary songs like that. Pin in that for now. But there's also a way to like have resonance in my body that, you know, I'm here now singing, humming, and that resonance was missing in the silence. And let me tell you, I had so many things to be grateful for during these 2 hours of vomiting this churro into the Pacific Ocean that it felt like a spiritual experience. Instead of thinking, you know, I need this to end, please make this end, I just was kind of dialed and attuned to the gratitude of learning a lesson about how I handle seasickness. I'm so grateful, you know, gratitude that it was a churro that I just ate when it could have been something unpleasant like corned beef coming back up. Gratitude for the beauty of the water, and probably most of all, gratitude that I had access to a bathroom, and I love that for me. Because, you know, my body knew what it needed. It needed privacy. Thank you. Thank you, body. Sincerely, that is A-plus work, you know? I am so grateful that my body knew what I needed more than I did. And it was like, I know this is unpleasant, but you know what you need, Kara? How about I make it so that you have to sit in an enclosed space for a while? How's almost shitting your pants down? And I am grateful for that. So there's this mind and body piece of a nervous system. But then I realized there's also this story portion that you tell yourself. And I was a Jesus freak and feeling dysregulated and all up in my feelings of shame and jealousy or anxiety. I knew how, when I was Mormon and an evangelical type of Christian, I knew how to put them on God. And a lot of people experience God differently. But the one that I believed in was actually pretty awesome. We had a great agreement pretty much my entire life that, you know, when I was angry or ashamed, I could pray. I could get a warm, comforting feeling of love, and that all of this discomfort could be handed to God. So my outsourcing of calm, you know, not perfectly, but it was all that I had, and it worked, and it really worked fabulously. And I was such a Jesus freak that, you know, my second time giving birth was so regulated by my trust in the Lord that I was literally always told people how fun and painless it was and never stopped talking about it and how I wanted to do it again. Where I'm at now is that it's not about whether God is real or not real. I really don't care. Regardless, I think you'll act out of whatever nervous system you believe is real. And if you're ex-Mormon, if you're an atheist, if you believe the same things that I do about things being untrue, I really don't care. I'm going to ask how you regulate yourself outside of the old religious traumatic patterns. I'm going to ask what your breathwork practice is. I don't care who the new leadership of the church is. I want to know who is leading your ship. You feel me? So for 31 years, you know, I believed untrue things about the nature of reality, you know, aka me being able to send a prayer up to heaven with my mind to a God, and then them being able to be loving and receptive and having a greater plan for me, and then them sending that back down in a third of the Godhead in the Holy Ghost to dwell within me. And that was the coolest concept to me. And I used it all the time. I believed that that was enough to regulate me. So without that, everything fell on me, and all the anxiety with all the changes, the traumas, the bills, where there was, you know, no divine parent to hand all of that off of. When you strip away the theology and, you know, the moral ideals and the garments and the meetings and the temple and what religions like Mormonism really offer a person, in my experience, is a template for safety. They offer a system that you can plug into that keeps the body calm and predictable. And I already knew that when I left this religion that I was leaving community. I was leaving what was expected of me to live a happy life, knowing what was right and wrong according to them. But what I didn't realize is that it gives you a God who is kind of always available to co-regulate your anxiety, you know, because they call it a faith crisis. But the crisis part, the panic, is real. You know, your faith in this whole thing is collapsing, sure, but along with it, your only known way to regulate amidst the collapse is also gone. So we have trouble admitting it, but I think that's a huge, huge part of disentangling yourself from what a cult does to a person. So when I learned and really integrated the ideas of, you know, the self as a calm observer, that the consciousness is like watching and observing behind the chaos without judgment, like that was a vital piece of building a nervous system that I had to build from the ground up post-religion. Like for me, that idea was life-saving. But, you know, I had to learn over the last 5 years what performance of like regulation and calmness is kind of like, and what it's not, like how to not disassociate and detach, but actually feel truly safe. And that had to do with like not being a stoner and getting on the right meds and then building on top of that to make sure the brain chemistry wasn't so adrift. So like now, instead of collapsing into prayer, I pause and I always notice my nose. I always go to my nose. Everyone else does, which is fine because I lead by example. So I notice my breathing. I notice my nose. I feel awe in the concept of my breath. It makes me remember like, holy shit, I'm alive. I'm performing chemistry right now with my body converting oxygen into carbon dioxide. How cool is that? You know, the world provides for me and I provide for it. Holy shit. What an amazing wonder it is that this is happening to my body. Oh, gee whiz, I wonder what else is happening in my body now too. Like, okay, checking in with myself. I'm feeling really hot. I'm feeling like my fists are getting clenched. I'm feeling like my heart is pounding. And then next comes, you know, what's the story that my brain is saying right now? 3, 2, 1, go off. You have full permission to say whatever you want to say. Okay, I'm thinking, you know, okay, I'm a moron. This is unfair. I don't like this. This is impossible. I don't like what's happening. When will the suffering end? Things like that. Stuff along those lines. Why can't we have nice things? Someone chained me to my bed and never let me leave it because the world is scary and I hate it here. You know, give or take of those kind of ideas. And then next is normally where, like, in my old self, a prayer to God would come in. And that kind of stuff, you know, it has it all. It slows down your mind and your breath, and you're kind of naming what you need. And here's my little secret. Here's my blasphemy. Here's what a lot of ex-religious people got to get comfortable with doing is, personally, I think you got to rewrite your brain that you can do a better job holding yourself in tough moments than God could. Because in my experience, you've got to have a myth. You've got to have a story, a lead character that is you, that you believe in, that you have evidence shows up for you, that you can count on to be able to trust, to be able to calm you. And I'm not a god. The truth of the matter is, I don't need to know what makes up divinity to know that I'm a chip off the old block, right? What else is self-regulation if not putting faith in something bigger, something mysterious, something you don't understand yet, where, you know, all of that flooding of emotions makes us feel small and like narrowed in on one story, usually a negative one, where like having faith in a bigger version of you that can just like hold that and expand beyond it. What was prayer doing? It was restoring a sense of safety. But now it feels more internal and it feels not so outsourced and dependent on my righteousness, right? Feels like I can be embodied, unjudgmental, I can be honest, because like after you leave a religion, you can know that you have to build a new life of things that you now believe and take this and throw away that. But what I didn't realize is that I was going to have to build a nervous system like I was building a new mythology. It is like building a new mythology of safety. And when you think of it in those terms, it's easier just to like plug in some blasphemy and be like, oh yeah, okay. And I love reclaiming that more than anything. We aren't lucky because we can drink alcohol now. Give me several breaks. No, we're lucky because we can do things and use rituals that, you know, we know are right for our bodies, not because we think we'll be punished by God if we don't do them. What I wish I would have known is that leaving religion does anything but just make you free. It's such a nuanced concept. It's more like having an open wound. Like, yeah, your wound is free from skin. Like, is that really free? Or is it just raw? Because my journey has felt a lot more raw than free most of the time. And I wish I would have known that, you know, my body's going to keep the score long after my mind deconstructs the theology. Because most of my day-to-day life is parenting, you know? And that, more than anything, is spiritual work, because it shows you exactly where your nervous system still believes in hell. My biggest parenting advice, what I've realized is my number one goal in my life and for my kids is I don't get to freak out. I gotta stay calm. My main job is just to stay calm and regulate other little bodies so that they can co-regulate to my calmness. That at any given time, my go-to is, how do I show up as my calmest, most grounded version of myself? And that's the only way I'm gonna have the household that I almost have now. I mean, I have a 5-year-old, so he's... But other than that, my girls are doing great. Man, they're special. They're adorable. That whole, like, that whole mentality of like, instead of saying, oh, I have to do this, like, I get to do this. Like, I really enjoy the hard parts of life now. My sister just confronted me about something rude that I said to her on the trip. And, you know, she was right. I was wrong. But I love being in community with people who can call me out. And I celebrate the opportunity to meet the unhealed parts of me and go, oh, gee whiz. All right, cool. When I can let myself feel defensive and jealous and sad and still trust that I am just feeling things. I am not those things. I am not all of those things. I am chip off of divinity's old block. And I think that's so cool. I love knowing that. And this is not me being religious. I'm just saying there is something uniting all of us. And it is like a divine consciousness that I don't understand. And I know that I'm a chip off of that and how hella cool that is. I love getting to feel like I'm meeting all the parts of myself and regulating myself and therefore meeting the closest thing to God again and again. It's not in heaven. It's not in a temple. It's actually just in the chest. It's in the ribcage, right? That's my reality. That's what I wish I would have known. Does that make sense? Leaving the church was not going to be about losing belief. That's obvious. It was going to be about learning how to become the source of safety I'd always imagined God to be. So that's the review that I left on Google for Seabreeze whale watching cruises. Let's move on to Frontier Airlines. The vessel of regulation this time was not a ship, but an airplane. And the journey, not toward whales, but towards music. Now, if you don't know Frontier, imagine if an airline and a Craigslist scam had a baby. Okay, so mine and my sister's favorite band in the whole wide world, the Format, got back together after 20 years. My sister, she lives next door, helps out so much, and I wanted to treat her. So I got tickets and we made it happen. Because for me, when, you know, a concert is good, it is the most transcendent place that I've ever been. I had a spiritual awakening at the Eras Tour, to be honest. So the catharsis in my body, singing back every word to a song that's, you know, gotten me through some hard times, it really can feel holy. And it just does. It feels really holy to me. And I latched on to the Format's album, Interventions and Lullabies, in high school. And it's just been like my go-to drive in the car and blast my eardrums and cry and sing every word, you know, that's just been there for me. And the Format, Nate Roos's first band, also Grammy Award winner, sang that one song with Pink, Just Give Me a Reason. Anyway, his other band, Fun. I don't need to get into all of this, but it was my sixth time seeing him perform, Nate Roos perform live, since I was like 17. And to be honest, I'm broke, but I told myself concerts like this are part of my religion now. I will go see Nate Roos live, even if it kills me, which statistically speaking was likely because I was flying on Frontier. So I decided to go. I used to live in LA for 3 years. I know my way around, and I was like, this is going to be a pilgrimage. But I learned a valuable lesson that flying Frontier Airlines, that they overbook their flights, and sometimes up to 20 people. If you're the last person to check in and it's overbooked, you're not getting to your destination. I did not know that when I was buying a ticket, that I was not guaranteed a seat on the airplane like other airlines do. So silly me. So we get to the airport, no checked bags. You know what? My sister, she wasn't quite ready when I picked her up. You know, that delayed us by 20 minutes. But hey, you know, not a big deal. I'll check in when we get to the airport on my phone. Boopity boop. Nope, can't check in. It's 50 minutes before the flight takes off. You need an hour to check in. We got bumped. No seat for us. Frontier, you know, they gave me back a credit that I can use another time. But it was, I was one of those people standing at the gate being told, yeah, no, you're not getting on this flight. There's no more seats. You didn't check in an hour before we take off. So even though you're here boarding, there's no flight for you. Your dreams are shattered. And I could feel my nervous system collapsing into, you know, this all too familiar script of like, no, this is impossible. I'm a moron. I should never leave my house. But then I remembered, this is the work. This is the alchemy. I took a breath, felt my fist clench. I squatted right down there at the gate counter because I was being an emotionally mature adult, being in the fetal position just for a quick minute in public, and asked myself, you know, what do you need right now? And the answer was ketamine. But then my next thought was, what I really need is to lie down and just feel myself breathe. And just breathe. I just need to lay down and breathe. The future, none of my business. The present can only be fixed if it is felt. So in that moment, you know, I didn't reach enlightenment or anything, but I did reach for something else close, which was self-trust. Because it's just the spiritual practice, whatever you want to call it prayer, breath work, dry heaving over a boat. It's really the same thing. It's learning how to hold yourself through external chaos because, you know, the goal isn't to control what's going on outside of you. It's just to create a little internal space that chaos can't overtake you. And that's what some people call transmutation and what I call just resisting the urge to be a Karen at gate B18. That's all I was trying to do. I didn't have a bag to check, but I did check my privilege because, you know, these circumstances are not a big deal. People are going through bigger things. These are just times that offer invitations to meet a stronger version of yourself. How lucky am I to experience that? I was thinking, you know, I thought we were going on a pilgrimage to Los Angeles, but it was really a pilgrimage to presence, pilgrimage to myself. So my sister, who is a sweetie McSweetie pie, hope she'll come on here someday, but she doesn't like being on camera, but she's the best. Handed her my phone. She calls Frontier about getting the flight voucher. You know, I'm just get to lay there, regulate myself. So I don't know what she's smoking, which is nothing because she's a type of Christian that I explained earlier, esoteric Christian. She's on nothing. She's almost basically Mormon, and I don't know how she does it. But she was perfectly fine. She didn't have to make a video about regulation. She was just already there. She was a sweetie. She handled everything. So we walked the 17 miles to the other side of the Salt Lake Airport to purchase a Delta flight that was leaving an hour later. The luxury of Delta snacks and screens soothed me in addition to my self-regulation. So while I didn't make it onto the earlier flight, I did make it into a deeper relationship with myself, and that I'm learning is always the real destination. So we get to LA, and the hijinks, man, they just wouldn't quit. I get to the car rental place, and I was having a little fight with my sister. I said something mean on the shuttle because, you know, sometimes I say things that I think are funny but are just rude, and I'm working on it. So after missing our flight, and you know, I lived through that. I handled it. I thought I was good. Oh, so you think you've done something? Let's see and test that immediately. We're taking a shuttle to the car rental place. She's reading a book, and every 5 minutes, she's giving me an update on how many pages she's read, you know, page counts, chapter titles, Goodreads summaries, all out loud. And while it was an interesting book she was reading, I just really wanted to be left alone. And I did not have the words to express that, and I regret that now. So if you've ever had an older sibling, maybe you'll understand what happened next. My inner child, the little sister who's spent 3 decades trying to prove that I'm not a moron, snapped a little bit, and I said something mean, wasn't catastrophic, something to the tone of, oh, you're enjoying your book, tell someone who cares, okay? In my defense, she had made reading on the plane her entire identity, and I was over here trying to watch Friends reruns on the overpriced seat back screen that I'd shelled out $400 for on a one-way ticket that I wanted to enjoy. But that is not on her, that is on me. So, you know, old wiring sometimes, you feel judged, you get defensive, you weaponize sarcasm. So that's my nervous system's version of fight or flight. Every family system has its mythology. Mine says that my sisters are the smart ones. I'm the funny one. They're the disciplined ones. I'm the chaotic one, but with a heart of gold, you know? And I'm usually pretty good at having a good time wherever I am. And I can kind of be the observer of the circumstances and just let things kind of be a mirror and not live so much in the moment and see that, like, this external conflict is just like revealing an internal pattern. That's great. That's fine. You know, my mind might be like, she's judging you. And then my mouth is like, let's say things now and not check back in with the body or mind. And just like, let's just do it. Let's just say things. And, you know, I love surprises. Let's see what comes out. Doesn't go very well for me. And I'm sorry. So later I apologized and trying to, you know, make the apology not about making her like me again, but just reclaiming my own, like, I was dysregulated there. Yeah, okay, I see that. Let me go ahead and reclaim that. Because I just think that when you get defensive, you know, that's a sign that your body is like, my worthiness, my love here is conditional, so let me bark like a dog. But sometimes you got to be like, okay, how about instead if I operated from a place of knowing that I am a chip off of divinity's old block? And a sweet darling angel, just with blankets of distrust that the world has placed on my sweet, unconditionally loved heart. Acting from that space, how would I like to show up? So I told my sister, you know, you're right. I was rude. I was just trying to be like, alchemize this, taking responsibility without hating myself. Like, you know, that's where the gold is really found. That like a spiritual life is starting from a foundation of like chip off of the old divinity's block, knowing that how do you want to act now? How do you want to turn whatever circumstances that you're in into something you can alchemize and it's more of a sacred space? A good nervous system, a good spiritual life, like a good way to get through things. It's not going to be forged in the absence of conflict. That's my new faith, you know, that I can meet my shame and still love myself through it. I can, you know, be wrong and I can still feel worthy of love. And that's not always been the case, because going from a high demand religion to high demands for yourself without kind of piecing together the old, you can still be wrong and be worthy of love. Like having faith in that, acting upon that, like that is really the closest thing to God that I've found that replaces the God from before. So that's my review of Frontier Airlines and Green Motion Car Rental. Now back to more lessons I'd like to learn, because I have a platform and I'd like to educate you as much as possible. The car rental place also totally ripped me off. And I didn't know that I had to bring a credit card. I thought that I prepaid and I could just use my debit card, but no, there's a $70 fee and $500 that gets withheld on that card. And yes, they did explain that in the fine print that I didn't read. That's on me. However, nowhere did it say that I had to bring my insurance information, my policy number, all of that. And that I felt like was a scam and that I had to pay an extra $90 for. So I'm only a few hours into my trip and already having to fork over like $800 for tickets on Delta, another $160 for the car on top of what I already paid. So I was excited to finally get into my Kia Cube or whatever the hell it was that they gave me and soothe my tension by driving through the heart of LA into Hollywood in rush hour traffic. So actually, I'm being sarcastic about being sarcastic that I actually kind of love driving in LA. I feel so alive, unlike those Waymo robot cars on the road and those little food delivery robots on every street corner. My sister and I were chanting every time we saw one, "You will not replace us. You will not replace us." So when I first moved to LA, it was like 2011. I was 22 years old. And I'll never forget the best piece of driving advice that my friend Sina told me that I will now relay to you. I thought he was driving so crazy the first time I was with him. And he said that the key to driving in LA is that you have to operate from a place where everyone else cares more about their cars than you do, and that they will back off if you push and you drive aggressively. So when push comes to shove, no one wants to hurt their car. So you gotta make your move and trust that they will back down and they all care more about their cars than you care about your cars. So I've driven like that ever since and it's been great. And it's also a fun theory to test out with my $90 premium car insurance in my rental car. That's just a fun tip for driving that changed my life. But anyway, to conclude this story of what I wish I had when I left Mormonism, I wish I had a roadmap for self-regulation, sure. I'm not really that good at, you know, reading a book or finishing one, and I have to learn through trial and error. You know what you're really going to need as a travel companion? A calm nervous system. So I wish that I like had the language for my trauma and my dissociative behaviors that had caused, you know, more damage that then I was going to have to spend more years learning how to repair, right? I'm not really living in the wish I had version of myself anymore. Like, you know, when I left, I assumed that I was going to leave Mormonism and I was going to go carry on being a Christian and in my Jesus freak stage. But when I found out that that Christian God was also like not quite a true thing either, it's disappointing. But the luck was kind of in finding that whatever God did for me. I'm not saying that God is a literal thing. Like, I still identify as an atheist overall. I'm just saying, like, whatever the utility of God was for me, that doesn't have to live outside of my body, but it can actually live in a fun little space inside my chest. So you leave the church, and if you're lucky, you can find yourself. And I'm lucky that I think I have. And it's an ongoing journey. So pilgrimages help with that. Going back to kind of where life picked up and stopped back to like what I enjoyed as a teenager, going to the concert, you know, that was dope. I got there just in time to see the opener, Phantom Planet, sing their hit song, the song that you want to hear when you arrive in California. It goes, and you're like, oh shit, I got here just in California, here we come. I got a spot really up close to the fence at the front of the stage, screamed, dance my heart out, just a delightful night with my sister. Everything was right with the world again, except the whale watching vomit cruise the next day and me falling asleep on the grass outside of the vomit cruise where I washed off my feet from the vomit splashes that I like dumped my water bottle on my feet. And then I was so tired that I just collapsed on the grass and then I took a nap in the water that soaked my whole entire outfit. That wasn't so good. And then the vegan restaurant was actually just like a granola pizza and like unedible mushroom sandwich. Sorry, Cafe Gratitude. It's one star for you as well. But I did, if you've never been to Cafe Gratitude in LA, I wanted to go because I love the bit. I live for a bit because everything is like, you can order like the I am stellar. Everything is like, I am beautiful. I am wholesome. If you order the I am stellar, they give it to you and they say you are stellar. And it's fun because I'm not vegan like my sister. But I finally really got to go to a restaurant that respects my values. You know, I can still have a good time. I can still have a good time laughing with my sister pretty much through anything, except driving through the Pacific Palisades, the area that I used to nanny that was burned to the ground. Yeah, just like kind of really lost it. Like no good symbolism there, like nothing to learn. That was an interesting, unfun experience. So my heart goes out to everybody in LA that had to live through that. So besides all of that, it was a great trip, except for also losing my phone on the shuttle on the way to the airport. It was great. So to recap, going on a pilgrimage to see your favorite band, it can be a holistically enlightening experience if you let it be. And if I could go back and tell my newly ex-Mormon self one thing, it would be this. It would be, you don't need to put your faith in a God, in a prophet. You need a playlist. Not a prophet, you need a playlist. You don't need to go to the temple. What if we just swapped that out for everyday experiences? Temple, maybe it's just the bathroom of a whale watching boat. What if temples are airline shuttles? What if the spaces in which used to be crafted to go into to feel holy, what if that is just you're finding the ways in which to tap into that in your everyday life? That you don't need prayers anymore to have certainty in things, that everything's going to be all right, that you can just breathe and you can laugh and find awe and find gratitude. And all of that supersedes the power God once had to hold you through tough times. So anyway, I'm so happy to be making content regularly again. I'm so excited to be in my new house, this new studio. I've had a lot of time and space to think about, you know, who I am and what I want. And I wish the same to all of you. So if you relate to the things that I've shared today, if you have comments or questions, please leave them down below. I try to do my best at reading every single one. So, you know, the world is becoming increasingly unsafe, and I hope I can do my part to foster some safety. So I will be working with Britt Hartley from No Nonsense Spirituality and Jim Palmer to become trained and certified to be a secular spiritual director and also do some trip sitting with psychedelic integration. So if you're interested in working with me in the future, my email is down below and we can just start chatting now. Thank you so much to everyone on Patreon. Thank you to the donors. I am looking for more donors right now. So reoccurring donations are really amazing. They've helped me survive up to this point, and I'm so grateful. But a lot of people have dipped out and moved on. So replacing donors is kind of what I need to do. So if you have a few bucks, that can go a long way. If you have a topic that you'd like me to cover, let me know. Thank you, everyone, for your kind words. They really mean a lot to me. Anyone who just takes the time to write anything out that's, you know, a nice message of Kara, good to see you again. Your hair looks amazing. They really help me keep going when my kids come home from school and interrupt my podcasts. And I think, should I even be doing this? And the answer is yes. So the last thought I will leave you with is a quote I heard yesterday around the idea that a woman, or anyone really, doesn't want to be analyzed or possessed, but felt and known through presence and passion. So go be present and passionate. My presence and passion is cracking jokes and having a dump truck ass. All right. Love you so much. Bye.